Alexander Nisbet's commentary on 2 Peter chapter 2 was published in the year 1658. This section starts with verse 10. But chiefly them that walk after the flesh and the lust of uncleanness and despise government. Presumptuous are they, self-willed. They are not afraid to speak evil of dignities. The former threatenings and examples of God's judgments, which concerns all ungodly men, are here particularly applied to some who did in a special manner incense the wrath of God against themselves, amongst whom false teachers and their followers are mainly eyed, and who are described from this that they follow their unmortified corruption as their ordinary leader, making a trade of sins against the second table, particularly the 7th and 5th commandments of it, in which they were so bold and self-pleasing that they did not fear openly to disgrace any lawful authority that might oppose them in their wickedness. From this we learn, 1, whatever be the fair pretenses of singular holiness that false teachers used to have, 2 Corinthians 11, verse 13, yet really, in any fact, they are nothing else but profane slaves to their lusts. And insofar as truth is forsaken and error received, profanity must needs have place and holiness be forsaken. The same Spirit of Christ, being the Spirit of truth and the Spirit of holiness, for these seducers who drew so many after them, by their fair pretenses are mainly intended here, while the Apostle says they walk after the flesh and the lust of uncleanness. But secondly, although any one act of sin, yea, the least sinful motion of the heart, deserves God's everlasting wrath, Romans 6, verse 23, yet there is a singular measure of wrath abiding some sinners beyond others, particularly those who are not only through infirmity overtaken in sin, as the best of the saints have been, but to also make their corrupt inclination their ordinary guide and rule, and their following and satisfying thereof their common trade. For the threatening formerly given out against all the ungodly is here particularly applied to some, chiefly those that walk after the flesh. 3, the wrath of a holy God is in a special way incensed against the sin of uncleanness, and that not only against the outward acts of that sin, such as fornication, adultery, and so on, but against the very inward motions of the heart toward it. For there is a special measure of wrath here denounced against them who walk in the lust, or as the word signifies, the desire of uncleanness. 4, lawful magistracy is a divine ordinance, so precious in God's account that he will let out a special measure of his wrath upon men for lack of inward respect to it in their hearts, yea, for any expressions that may weaken the due esteem of it in the hearts of others, even though they have heathens that were invested with that office. For though magistrates were generally such at this time, yet there is a special degree of wrath threatened against them, who either undervalue in their hearts or disgrace by their expressions that ordinance, especially those who despise government and are not afraid to speak evil of dignities. 5. Men that are slaves to their own lusts are ordinarily unfriends to lawful magistrates. Pretend what they will, they who live in rebellion against God can never be truly royal to any vice regent of his, and therefore ought not to be preferred or countenanced by such, or any that give out themselves to be such, for they that walk after the flesh do also despise government. 6, the more stout-hearted men are in their sinful courses, outfacing all challenges, and the more wedded to their own inclination, not fearing to disgrace any that have a calling to oppose them in their wickedness, the more wrath have they to expect from God. For thus is the sin of these men aggregated, who are here threatened with a special measure of wrath. Presumptuous are they, and self-willed. 7, although sedition and disloyalty to lawful magistracy be the ordinary charge which false teachers give in against the faithful servants of Christ, Acts 24, 1-5, and 17, 6-7, as they did also against the Lord himself, Luke 23, 1-2, yet these false teachers themselves will be found to be the greatest unfriends of lawful magistrates, either denying or weakening their authority, If so be they employ their power anyway for opposing their errors or wicked practices. For false teachers are mainly intended here, and charged by the Spirit of the Lord with this guilt. They despise government, and are not afraid to speak evil of dignities. Chapter 2, verse 11, Whereas angels which are greater in power and might, bring not railing accusation against them before the Lord. Verse 12, But these, as natural brute beasts, made to be taken and destroyed, speak evil of the things they understand not, and shall utterly perish in their own corruption. The apostle, having shown how unlike these false teachers, who despise magistracy and government among Christians, are to the most glorious creatures of God, the good angels, shows here how alike they are in this and the rest of their carriage to the basest of the creatures, the brute beasts, and the resemblances between them which the apostles' words may lead us to are especially three. As the beasts are void of human reason, so are these of heavenly wisdom. As the beasts do readily trample underfoot the most precious things, so do they speak evil of the things they understand not, whereby is especially meant their opposing to magistracy and government among Christians, and their slandering of the doctrine of holiness, so much pressed by the apostles, as if it had been contrary to the liberty of Christians. And number three, as the beasts are framed for destruction, so are they for utter perdition, which is not to be understood as if they that have immortal souls could come to nothing as the beasts, but that they are appointed for eternal torment, which they do procure to themselves, as the beast is appointed for the slaughter. Hence we may learn, number one, however men of erroneous opinions and foul affections may be in so high esteem in the church by reason of their fair pretenses, and the specious titles they assume to themselves, as to draw a very considerable faction therein after them, yet does the Lord esteem such, and will in his own time discover them to be what they are in effect, base and beastly in their disposition and carriage. For here these false teachers, who pretended to be the only fountains of consolation to the church, verse 17, and patrons of Christian liberty, verse 19, by such fair pretenses gaining to themselves a numerous party, verse 2, are declared by the Spirit of the Lord to be as natural, brute, beasts. Application number 2, when men are led by their sensual appetite, not by holy reason, and do become very adventurous in passing most hard sentences against things they understand least, they have then the characters of a beastly disposition and carriage, for both these are here made resemblances between the beasts and false teachers, who as natural brute beasts speak evil of the things they understand not. Number 3. When men do thus resemble the beasts in their dispositions and carriage, it is the clearest evidence that can be that they are appointed for destruction as the beast is for the slaughter, and that however they may, as fed beasts, prosper for a time, yet their end shall be much worse than theirs. For the apostle makes a resemblance also in this, that as a beast is to be taken and destroyed, so shall they utterly perish. Number 4. The punishment that abides the wicked consists in a thorough and continual torment of soul and body, and a deprivation of all comfort, and that to all eternity, without any hope of recovery, which is imported in this, they shall utterly perish. Number 5. Whatever destruction comes upon wicked men, it is of their own procuring. They do in time by their sins treasure up the wrath and gather the fuel, which shall seize upon them and burn them up to all eternity, for they shall utterly perish in their own corruption. Verses 13 and 14. And shall receive the reward of unrighteousness, as they that count it pleasure to riot in the daytime. Spots they are, and blemishes, sporting themselves with their own deceivings while they feast with you, having eyes full of adultery, and it cannot cease from sin, beguiling unstable souls and heart day of exercise with covetous practices. Cursed children. Here is a further amplification of the sin and judgment of these false teachers whom the apostle has formally described and threatened. The substance whereof is that they shall lack nothing of the wrath due to those who count it their heaven to exceed in all carnal delights, notwithstanding of the light of the gospel, thereby disgracing their holy profession and making but a sport of deceiving their own souls, since they can in the meantime deceive others, insinuating themselves in the esteem and society of the godly, whether in the religious or ordinary feasts. Verse 13. Who are so under the power of their unclean lusts that they cannot but manifest their filthy disposition, being altogether impotent to resist temptations themselves, and ensnaring with their errors and foul practices such others as are not well settled in knowledge and grace, who are so sold to love of their gain that they make it their heart's exercise to attain to it, all which the apostle pronounces them heirs of God's fearful curse. Doctrine 1. The wrath of God against sin had need to be oft inculcated to the guilty and knit to the several branches of their sin, that so they may have the more lively apprehensions of that wrath, and may have their hearts accustomed to think upon it whensoever they think upon their sins, that so they may be either stopped in the course of their sin and hastened to repentance, or left a more inexcusable. Therefore the apostle, in branching out the sin of false teachers and their followers, does so frequently intermix threatenings, or some new representation of that wrath they have to expect. They shall utterly perish, as it says in the former verse. And in here, they shall receive the reward of unrighteousness, and they are cursed children. Secondly, when God reckons with the wicked, they shall not lack a grain weight of the wrath due to them. For since they have slighted the use making of Christ's righteousness, which makes sinners righteous, in the study of holiness, which proves them righteous, they shall receive the reward of unrighteousness, which in the original signifies the due proportion of wrath, their sin. Number 3. That which ripens wicked men for wrath is not their sins only, simply considered, but mainly the several aggravations ordinarily attending their sins, whereof there may be seen here 9 in number. As first, this does exceedingly aggregate men's sins when they count it their very paradise to satisfy their lusts, for so is a word in the original. They count it their Eden to riot, the more heaven men apprehend in their sins, the more hell they will find in them. Number 2. When men become so impudently bent upon their lusts that neither the light of the world's knowledge of their sin, nor the light of the word discovering the evil hazard of it, restrains them, both which may be comprehended in this other aggravation of their sin, they count it pleasure to riot in the daytime. Number 3. When men by their sins do stain a holy profession that they have made before the world, for if these men had not had a fair profession and high esteem in the church, they could not have been spots and blemishes while they feasted with the Lord's people, which is here made another aggravation of their guilt. Number 4. When men do not only live in sin, but make a sport of it, beguiling their own hearts with groundless apprehensions that there is neither such evil nor hazard in them, as the word holds forth, and our own conscience sometimes suggests, for this is another aggravation, they sport themselves in their own deceivings. Number 5. When in the meantime they're living in the slavery of their lusts, they are careful to keep up their esteem with the godly, and attend all occasions of converse with them, that so they may cloak their sins, for it is here made another aggravation of their guilt, that all this wickedness is committed while they feast with the Lord's people. Number 6. When men's lusts are so vigorous within that they manifest their predominancy in the very outward carriage, for this is a further aggravation of their sin, they have eyes full of adultery. Number 7. When men become so impotent to resist their lusts that the satisfying of them becomes their very element, out of which they cannot rest, as the word here signifies, they cannot cease from sin, which is also another aggravation of their guilt. Number 8. When sinners become infectious and snaring, with a bait of fair pretenses, as the word beguiling in the original signifies, many others, to swallow down their foul errors and profane practices. This also is a high aggravation of their guilt. Number 9. When men make it their hard exercise whereabouts they spend their wit and affections to fulfill their fleshly desires, for this is here the last aggravation of their sin and heart they have exercised with covetous practices. Doctrine number 4. Although it be possible that the Lord's people may without guiltiness admit into their ordinary and intimate society the worst of men, while they do not discover themselves, as is clear concerning Ahithophel and Judas, yet does the admission of such into their society oftentimes prove a great snare, especially to those that are admitted, while they take occasion from this to harden themselves in those sins, and account the less of that vileness, the commission of which does not mar their esteem of society with the godly. For this is one thing that helped these soul deceivers to deceive themselves, and willingly to overlook the evil of their own condition, that notwithstanding of all their wickedness, they were admitted to the society of the godly, and did pass among them for such, while they feast with you. Doctrine number 5. When men labor not to mortify their inward lusts, the Lord oftentimes justly suffers them to manifest a predominancy of these lusts over them in their outward carriage. His grace, which is lively within, will put some beauty upon the outward man, Ecclesiastes 8, verse 1, so corruption is vigorous within, will readily betray the person to be a slave, Isaiah 3, verse 9. Having eyes full of adultery, or as it is in the original, of the adulteress. Number 6. So bewitching is a spirit of error where it enters, and so devoted or deluded souls to their seducing teachers, that though these teachers be judicially plagued of God, as ordinarily such are, with profanity of life, yet this does not make their followers loathe them or abhor their errors, though they rioted in the daytime and had eyes full of adultery, yet were they still beguiling unstable souls. Number 7. Those who were not rooted in knowledge by clear information and frequent meditation of the truth, and have not their hearts established with the grace by the frequent exercise of it, will readily be a prey to soul deceivers, for those whom they beguile are here called unstable souls. Number 7. Those who are not rooted in knowledge by clear information and frequent meditation of the truth, and have not their hearts established with grace by the frequent exercise of it, will readily be a prey to soul deceivers, for those whom they beguile are here called unstable souls. Number 8. No man serves one idol alone, but many at once. He that is wedded to worldly pleasures will be also wedded to his credit. Lack of this mars his pleasure. And if pleasure and credit be two of a man's idols, ready gain will be the third, that so he may the more easily attain to the other two. Therefore the apostle describes these men here as slaves to all the three idols at once, to their pleasures which were their Eden, to their credit, which made them hold forth base to take many followers, and to their gain in which their hearts was exercised, so that their pleasure and credit might be attained and upheld. Lastly, they who profess themselves to be the children of the Lord, but spend their immortal spirits upon the unworthy things of this present life, not trusting to his care and providence and the moderate use of lawful means, whereunto their profession does oblige them, forfeit the right they pretend to have to the privileges of his children, and serve themselves heirs to his curse. For because their heart is exercised with covetous practices, they are cursed children.